Dakota has turned up the frequency. Buses are running more often across Central Ohio. Starting this September, you'll see expanded weekend service on the east and north sides, including the Easton and Polaris corridors. Plus, there are added weekday trips downtown from New Albany, Canal, Winchester, and Tuttle. It's more service, more connections, and more ways to move across the city. Discover the enhanced schedule at coda.com/service changes. That's coda.com/service changes.
Survivor Specialist John and McKenna are back with the final podcast of the night. Thank you, everyone, for sticking with us over here on the Specialist channel. We're just here grinding out podcasts. And we are here to talk about this episode of Survivor, but in the past, and some of our favorite outwit, outplay, and outlast moments. Boy, John, did we struggle. I feel like we've been saying this for weeks now. But I feel like this was in a different way that we were struggling, sort of. We were trying not to talk about all the things we were talking about in 44 because this is strangely aligning with 44 in just, you know, topics that we want to mention and talk about.
Yeah, it's really weird because obviously 44 was 5 seasons ago. Like, it was 2.5 years ago now. It was our first season doing the rewind. It was a different format of the podcast back then. So it gives us a little bit of leniency of kind of double dipping with some of those things. But we want to kind of talk about it. We try, as hard as it might be sometimes, to talk about different topics as much as possible, because that makes it more interesting for you guys, the listeners. And it's more interesting for us too, to be frank. But, and the interesting thing about where 49 is, like, we're really seeing, we're getting far enough away from those first seasons in the new era that we're really starting to see the comparisons between moments in them. And I think that's a really big thing that came out of this episode. I know, frankly, coming out of that episode last night, I didn't feel great about it. And I've been thinking about it a lot since then. I mean, I watched the episode twice every Wednesday. I watched it on the East Coast airing and the West Coast airing. And I'm watching it with a group of people who aren't as in tune with the Survivor community. It's one of their first seasons, or, you know, they've watched a couple, but it's all been new era stuff. And they don't, more importantly, they don't know who's on Survivor 50. So they don't know how to read the edit kind of hinting us towards that. And I think they enjoyed the episode a lot more because of that. And McKenna, you and I had this conversation yesterday where I'm not the biggest Savannah fan, but I think it's because of the way that the edit's kind of setting her up as like this big picture, and the fact that we got so much of her in that pre-merge when she wasn't really doing much in the pre-merge because she wasn't going to tribal council in those first couple of episodes. As she started going to tribal council, it made a lot more sense to seeing her. But as we continue going through that, and like as I'm thinking about it more, and the big thing that I said to you was, the problem with like the framing of this episode for me is that we should be voting for Savannah and Rizzo here, because they're the underdogs now, right? Like, they're the ones who can come back and make an instrumental comeback, and maybe like we'll see how far into the season they go at this point. But they're the interesting part of this season now, and it's interesting when we get that switch in dynamics, right? Because we had that switch where it was Sage and Juwan in that field, and then all of a sudden, an episode later, Rizzo and Savannah are in that. And we see some spectacular gameplay from the pair of them in this episode, right? Contrasting some like not so great gameplay from the other pair who seemed to be taking control of the game the week before. And the more I thought about it, the more I was like, no, this is a really good episode of Survivor. And my actual complaints about it are I am tired of the cookie cutter format of the new era. And I realized that especially
come down to that, like, cookie cutter. All right, we're expecting the double tribal now. And we know either this outcome's going to happen, this outcome's going to happen, or this outcome's going to happen because of the double tribal. Like, half of them are going to be safe. They get to, you know, still vote somehow, or some advantage is hidden. And, you know, this is what we got.
Yeah, it just makes it feel a little weird from a viewer standpoint. And again, part of that is knowing where we're headed to in 50. I saw some really good tweets from some people yesterday. I can't remember exactly who. It was people in the Survivor community, whether it was Survivors or like podcasters on RHAP or something like that, who said this episode would be really good if we didn't know who was on 50.
Yeah.
And I think that's right. But it still has...
I think this season would be really good if we didn't know who was on 50.
Yes. And maybe the edit would be a little bit different, too, in that case. Mm-hmm. Which I think would make it a little more interesting, because I'm so confused on the edit some of the people in the season are getting. I have no idea what Sophie Segretti's edit is. It's wild, because she was completely invisible for the first part of the season. Starts like kind of getting there with the second merge or the second swap. We start seeing some stuff.
She's impossible to beat at challenges. Did you hear?
Apparently. And it's like, okay, where's this coming from? Or where is this idea of her becoming this threat that everyone wants to get out coming from? Because we didn't see that leading up to it. So there's just like some narrative things that are missing in these episodes. Sometimes I feel like Survivor editors don't look at like overarching storylines and like actually thread them through. We get them sometimes, especially with like winners and things like that. But sometimes when it's not the winners, they seem to not care about those threads that we as an audience kind of need in order to follow a story. I think this season gets a lot better on a binge because of it.
Yeah.
And I do think like it is going to be interesting revisiting it as a binge, especially because that'll be like my third time watching this season essentially. But it's just fascinating to see where the season's going. And though I was a little disappointed in this episode at first, I've really come around on it for like, there's some spectacular Survivor gameplay in here that is so nuanced. We couldn't even really talk about it in the context of like a rewind, because we didn't have moments we could reference back to with that.
Yeah. So in our Outwit moment, we're going to talk about defensive idol searches, because we see here with Alex, Steven, and Christina, they're like, all right, we have to find this idol so the other side doesn't get it. We need to make sure we are in control. And we do see a lot of, you know, people wanting to get the idol for, you know, reasons of they don't want one person to get it or something like that. But it wasn't like, it didn't feel like it was in the same context. Mm-hmm. So when we think of one of the first ones we think of is Parvati's idol in Micronesia. And you're like, wait, Parvati doesn't have an idol in Micronesia. It's because it's not shown, because it was unimportant to that episode, apparently, where she finds the idol and discards it because they don't need it. They sent her to exile so she could be the one to, you know, stop the idol. And it wasn't shown. But so I'm glad we have this scene here. Like you were saying before, of like, maybe is the winner coming from Alex, Steven, Christina? I'm not sure. I don't believe so.
I think there's like an all outside chance that Steven or Alex win based on the edit, but Alex like tanked so much in the swap that I don't think so.
So like it's tough. Like you were saying before, like them including this scene, small scene of them talking about like, we need a defensive idol search, is really fun because we get to see like why they are all searching together. It could have just cut around to be like, oh, Christina, I want to find an idol. These guys just happen to be with me.
Yeah, I mean, the most interesting thing about this aspect is that it's really showing the integration Alex has with those original Hinas. And I can understand why it's there. Obviously, it's an idol point or an idol find, right? Like, we talk about Micronesia, where Parvati gets intentionally sent to exile by Eric to find the idol so that no one else can have it. It's very defensive. It's exactly in line with what Rizzo was saying last week about his logic of not playing the idol, because that way you know where it is. It's the same reason why no one targeted Eva last season, right? Because Eva last season, because there was no reason to, because you knew she had the idol, and as long as you knew where the idol was, it wasn't being replanted. There was no reason to scramble, right? Like, we don't have something like this where it necessitates that defensive idol play to know where the idol is. What this scene is, and I kind of like jumping on what Phil said on Wednesday and earlier today, this feels like a setup for Is this the idol that Sophie Valeri is going to be, like, Sophie Valeri is going to grab with the knowledge's power? Like, is that where we're going with this? Because it where's Christina's edit to be like, yes, I have an idol, and I'm either getting voted out with an idol or I'm playing an idol. So it's interesting. But strategically, like, this makes sense, right? This is why we do see idol hunts afterwards. And as we were kind of going through every single idol find in the history of Survivor, trying to find the ones that really felt defensive, the problem was a lot of them felt offensive because they're the people on the bottom going out immediately as soon as they know an idol's being replanted.
Right. So, like, a Rick Devens, it's, like, offensive because he needs to save himself, where if it was, like, Ron being like, oh, I need to go out, you know, we as old Kama need to band together and get this idol so Rick doesn't have it, that's like a defensive kind of, we need to keep it with the group.
Yeah, exactly, which is why the Parvati example works so well. And it's so awkward to have to discuss a moment that is just like out there in the Survivor zeitgeist, we know it exists, but isn't shown on the show. And we avoid those moments as much as possible in the rewind. But it is the perfect example here because it was so, it was built in a way that Amanda and Parvati knew exactly what they were doing in order to gain complete control and knowledge of the game. Like, we talk of, there's literally an advantage in this game called knowledge is power. And right. This is why. Because if, and especially back in Micronesia, when you don't have to worry about there being multiple idols, there is one idol, it's only coming from one place. You know exactly where it's going to be.
Yeah.
So you have that ability to manufacture the game in a way that you can defensively stop it. Like, yes, here we have a defensive idol hunt in 49. The only reason we know that can happen is based on the assumption that an idol is replanted after every time an idol is played.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. we also see, I wanted to mention China here with James's two idols, because it does feel defensive in a way, but also how we were saying before of like, it is kind of on the attack. But it's like Todd wants to protect James. So he gives him the idol and then says, this is where it is on your camp, and James gets it so that the other people don't get it and he can have control of those two idols. And then everybody in Todd's alliance also knows where those two idols are, and James was supposed to take out one of the old John Hu members because they were supposed to lose the challenge, etc., etc. But we have here of like that, all right, protect yourself, take it away from Jean Hu so we can have that control of this idol.
The big difference with China, because like, yeah, arguably it is defensive, but it's defensive for the person who needs that defense, right? Like James is in a position based on like the terrible swap that we get in China where he needs to have some way of protecting himself because he's completely outnumbered. And they do the logical thing in China, right? Like, as after that swap, they do the logical thing of voting out Aaron and putting James on the bottom, because that's what the swap essentially tells you what to do when they say, take two people from the other tribe and bring them over here.
Right.
And you have this odd number, right, where there's a majority. And that's where the parallels lie, is like, yes, you're taking the idol out of the hands of Jean Hu, but at the same time, you're doing it because you think James absolutely needs it in order to survive this next vote. Mm-hmm. Because there was no way James wasn't supposed to throw that challenge. And like, again, like that's an instance where it happens to be so bad that you can't throw it anymore. So the plan has to change. But it's not quite a defensive idol hunt, in my opinion.
Mm-hmm.
Because you're not doing it strictly to keep it out of someone's hands and making it so that there's an unknown in the game. This is to make sure that you're protecting someone so you have numbers moving forward. Whereas in 49, this was a, let's make sure these three people who we have just spent an entire round putting on the bottom, like making sure they're put in their place, getting them as concealed as possible. We know one of them already has an idol. We cannot afford for them to have a second idol that we don't know about.
Mm-hmm. And then typically we only do two examples, but because China doesn't exactly fit, but I thought it was a good one to mention because it is kind of in that, you know, middle gray area. The Wu versus Spencer idol debacle search. And as Mr. Kageyan, please.
This is the most offensive, defensive idol hunt you could possibly have. I guess, as they say, right? Like a good offense is a good defense. So,
as Mr. Sports Guy, also.
Yeah, exactly. Right. Like we have to be getting some matches of sports on the specialist every once in a while. But this was Wu responding to a situation where he found out that Spencer was looking for an idol, gets the clue, and then everyone comes in order to try and prevent Spencer from finding this idol. Mm-hmm. This is exactly the situation that Steven, Alex, and Christina are working to prevent having to happen in 49. This is them being like, okay, worst case scenario is Rizzo finds a second idol that we don't know about.
Mm-hmm.
Best case scenario, we find the idol, we know where it is. I'm really interested to see if they actually keep it under wraps like they say they will. I'm really worried they're not going to. And that is actually like another thing that we were even talking about when it came to this episode, is just like navigating known idols and things like that, where you look at the time before the new era, idols kind of remain secret a lot of the time.
Yeah.
And that's the thing with this Kageyan hunt that makes it so fascinating, is like, they know Spencer has this clue. They see Spencer drop the clue. They get the clue. They go hunt for it because they have to. They have to try to figure it out. But the reason why it isn't a perfect parallel is because Spencer still finds the idol.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Like, the person who needs it still finds it. So the defensive idol hunt fails. Which is so fascinating when you consider everything that's going on in 49, where it didn't even really feel, and again, it's an edited show, we don't know what's going on. It didn't even really feel like Rizzo, Savannah, and Sophie B were even looking for the idol from what we could see. You have to assume they were, because they had to be feeling in a poor position.
It wasn't as like mad dashy as Kageyan was, because it was like, all right, time to go, because he has the clue and he's looking now and we have to try and prevent this now. They were like, everybody's at camp. Why don't we take a walk to the well?
Yeah.
Maybe go and look for an idol here and there. Like, it was like business as usual rather than fight to the death.
And I mean, they get the benefit from being in that majority too, right? Like, they have a 7-3 majority at this point. Mm-hmm. They can literally go off as a smaller group in that majority, because the other four people in that majority are like, cool, yeah, we don't have to worry about those three. We just have to watch the other three here, but there's four of us to do that.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. So with this,
although that also being said,
hmm,
there is a possibility this happened after the split.
Interesting.
Because all three of them were on that split track that stayed at the beach.
Oh.
Like, there is actually a possibility that, like, after Savannah left is when this hunt actually happened.
It's
just like placed in the episode differently. We won't know until we get like discussion from the players and everything to tell us how the timeline actually worked. But we do know they can fudge the timeline sometimes. It actually might make more sense if this happens in that split.
That's true. That's true. But, you know, magic of editing. Outplay this episode. We are going with Chimney Sweep. I was really excited when we got to see this challenge, because this is one of those endurance challenges that I would love to try, that I feel like I would be pretty good at, because I'm stubborn as all heck. You have the narrowing footholds, and you have to brace yourself against the walls and hopefully don't fall off. And these footholds, because it's new era, are getting narrower and narrower and narrower, as opposed to, say, Heroes versus Villains, where they have that tribal reward where they have to pair up between strongest to weakest, and they have to essentially just battle each other in the strongest, in the second strongest, etc. So that's also similar to what we have going on here in the two groups of the battle for the food and the advantage as well. So that was really interesting to kind of mash up with also individual immunity that we see in Edge of Extinction, but then we also see this challenge as a duel in Redemption Island. So like, it's, this is a challenge that is very versatile, that can be used as a wide array of placements here. So it's just a really fun visual challenge too, because you can see the struggle. It's different than the pole hold. It's different than the block on the head kind of thing. So I enjoy this one.
It's such a fascinating challenge because you look at it and you try to think of who will have an advantage based on like body size and things like that, or just like athleticism in general. And again, I'll reference the people I was watching the episode with. They were like, oh yeah, MC should like totally dominate this challenge. I'm like, no, MC's probably one of the first people out of this challenge, because this challenge doesn't benefit people who are taller. Like, being tall in this challenge kind of sucks. You almost want to be someone a little stockier, like a little on the shorter side, who just has like that good core strength in order to prop yourself up. And we even see in the challenge, we see Savannah kind of like shifting side to side. I think that is the method, because if you don't, then your legs are going to fall asleep, and that's probably when you fall down. When we look at this challenge in Edge of Extinction, right? Like, people are in so much pain getting off of it in order to, like, when they lose, they can't even walk because they're in so much pain. And I think what Savannah is doing in the shifting of her weight from hip to hip is so important in this challenge. And it's one of those things you probably wouldn't even
rest too. Sorry? You give 1 foot rest from the pain. Like, you put a little bit more emphasis on the pain in 1 foot to give 1 foot a little bit of a reprieve, so you can go a little bit longer.
Yeah, and I think as we move further into the new era and we get these smaller and smaller footholds, it also just benefits to have small feet in this challenge now. Not that it didn't in the first place, but like, we look at the first few people to win this challenge, right? Mm-hmm. We look at like, your JT wins this in Token Jeans, right?
Yes, he's athletic, but you wouldn't expect him to be the one to win it. You expect maybe Erin with two N's to win it, because she is that like Savannah build.
Yeah, but in fact, I'm pretty sure it was, I can't remember exactly who you could consider like the winner in Heroes versus Villains.
I mean, yeah, like a Candace, a Parvati, a Danielle would be like your typical winners. But like in Heroes versus Villains, you can see who you think might last the longest. So it's Sandra versus Rupert. Rupert's a big guy. Sandra's a smaller woman. Sandra's probably going to last the longest. Mm-hmm. Colby and Jerry might be a little bit more even, because Jerry's a bit taller than like Sandra is.
Colby's just kind of like a beastie, but like he's also like tattooed at that point, so like you never know, right? I think this is one challenge that kind of like, what I really enjoy about this challenge, and we've seen it 3 times in the new era now. We saw it in 44 and we saw it in 47. I think, oh wait, did we see it last season?
No, we saw it with Kyle Oswald.
But I like the fact that this is one that's just, is different than the other types of immunities we have. Like, I feel like this challenge benefits such a different grouping of people than what we saw last week, right? Like on the balance beam with the balls and the platform or whatever, right? Or podium or whatever you want to call it.
Yeah.
But this is, when you look at it as it's played out in HVV with the 1v1, I almost wonder if we could do that if we're using this as our split tribal thing. Like, maybe we're not playing. Maybe the reason why the whole split tribal of this bugs me so much is because we don't play into it much. Maybe it's also because Jeff literally said the pre-merge doesn't matter last week and then swapped us back to a pre-merge status. But
it could be interesting if we pull this challenge back from HVV and do it the 1v1 of each person draws a different colored rock and the two colors that match each other face off. The winners are in the safe split tribal. Yeah. The losers are in the losing split tribal. And then you do what you want. And then it gives a little bit more maybe agency to the players of like, yes, the pairings were random, but you fought to get your win of safety. If we're going to split it half-half where the two don't go and vote
Yeah, and it adds a little more strategy to it as well, right? Because then all of a sudden it's like, say this is going on and Rizzo and like, say we're doing this where they're all paired off and they're going against each other, and we see Rizzo drop and we see Sophie B drop. Does Savannah then drop so that they have the numbers in that split tribe that's going to tribal council, right? Like, there's some strategy added to it instead of the, hey, here's this, as Sophie Segretti said, right? Like, this is, here's a group of five people who have never been this a group of people before. We have no idea what's going to happen. And yes, I think Shirai got really lucky with how this tribal council ended up going, with how this entire situation ended up playing up. But we've seen instances like 47 where this happened, right? Where it was all of the, oh, was it the Tukus? Is that, am I thinking the right season name? Is it the right tribe? The Blue Tribe. All of the Blue Tribe and Rachel, right? Mm-hmm.
Yes.
And it was like, yeah, oh, well, Rachel's just going to go home here. And then Saul gives her the safety without power. So it's, like, you can have it go both ways where it's like, this is not how you want this to turn out, production. Why are you allowing this to happen in the first place?
It could also be interesting of like the way you drop determines which tribe you go on. So like the first person to drop will go to yellow. The next person goes to blue, to yellow, to blue, to yellow, to blue. And then if we're voting two people out, just the last two left up win immunity. And then, you know, then there's the strategy of, do I drop? Do I force my opponent to drop? Am I better off on what tribe? So that could also be a different way to do this challenge where it seems, you know, just reinvented a little bit. Like they have it in HVV. Like we have it as the duel in Redemption Island with Matt Elrod and Sarita. As a chance to get back into the game. So you are fighting to get back in and play this game that you may or may not love because we are in the recruitment era in that season. But for Matt Elrod, the game that you love.
I think on top of that, like when we shift over to one of the fascinating things I found about this, one of the thing that really bugged me about this challenge is when Savannah asked, what's the record?
Ugh.
Because it's like, that's like 23 minutes. That's a long time. And it's like, okay, cool. And I mean, we're talking Edge of Extinction. Like that's the season that we decided to pick this from to like kind of deep dive a little bit more in, because I'm going to take McKenna's thunder here. We're talking about it on the Patreon this week.
Watch that so you can go listen to us. We are watching Edge of Extinction. Awkward is the episode.
Episode 11. Yes. And it's so fun. Well, speaking of awkward, what's awkward is Savannah asking, hey, what's the record at 23 when it's just down to her and Sophie, Sophie Segretti, and in Edge of Extinction, there are only two people out at this point.
Yeah.
In fact, the third person in Edge of Extinction does not drop until the 33-minute mark.
The record in the new era, because that's when the footholds got different, but you can't even like compare to a record unless you get close to it. Like nobody is beating Parvati for when it rains, it pours, because they're not going to let that challenge go that long anymore.
Yeah.
They're going to put you on spikes or something like that.
and Savannah, sorry to like ruin your thunder here, but the first time this challenge ran in Fiji, it went on for over an hour. It went super long, but in Edge of Extinction, it only goes on about 50 minutes. But again, this is interesting, right? Like when you look at the people who are in Edge of Extinction, who you expect to win this challenge, right?
Mm-hmm.
You look at the cast of Edge of Extinction. Edge of Extinction has a lot of people who I think would actually excel at this type of thing, just like based on their builds.
Mm-hmm. I think Victoria probably does well, even though Lauren is taller than a lot of people. She is very athletic, so you might see that outweigh. But Gavin winning this challenge is actually, I'm not shocked by Gavin winning this challenge, because he is one of the smaller guys and he does have that athletic build to be able to like hold himself and maybe relieve his feet with it, like using his arms a little bit more or what have you. And he also has that determination from the loved one's visit too.
Yeah, I think I think the bigger thing to look at when it comes to the Edge of Extinction variant of this challenge is it's not surprising who the first two people to fall out of this challenge are. Mm-hmm. And by no means am I slighting Rick Devens nor Ron Clark here, because I love both of them.
Listen, but Rick Devens just had the immunity necklace put on him yesterday.
Exactly. There's just, it's just like, sorry, this is the not your challenge. And that's how it works in Survivor sometimes. And let's just reference something Rizzo said yesterday, right? The reason why not to vote out Sophie is because she can't win every challenge, because not every challenge is designed for everyone.
Yeah.
Like, tell ya, Rizzo listens to us, because, man, Phil says that a lot and not many people seem to listen to it.
Unless it is season 48 and the only challenges are arms.
Yeah, exactly. But even then, David didn't win every challenge. Joe didn't win every challenge. Like, yeah, it was still diversified a little bit.
Mm-hmm. So with this challenge, Savannah wins reward. And I was like, oh, all right, I've got some topics for the rewind. Nobody in the merge is going to a tribal council with the immunity necklace. Great. We can talk about this. It's because it's happened before. All right. No, strike that. Savannah is going with the immunity necklace to the beach. Womp womp. But wait. We've seen where they can transfer individual immunity onto someone who's going to tribal council. Great. We're going to talk about that. She just keeps it. So what does she do, though? She's an individual who is safe and is joining in on tribal council. So that is what we are going to talk about. It's a little bit like... I think it's a fun thing to talk about, having like this dynamic of someone who's safe and not part of this tribe, quote unquote, joining you.
It's weird because we have to reference pre-merge for this to work. Yes. Because post-merge, it doesn't make sense. This is our third iteration of seeing split into two groups and then one going and voting someone off. And we've seen it, like, we've seen different iterations now. We had Heidi's, which had like the weird block of vote thing,
mm-hmm,
where she went and did that. We had the aforementioned Rachel being saved by Saul giving her the knowledge without power. And we've had this one. Of those three iterations, McKenna, which do you prefer?
Honestly, this one, because it provides a lot more strategic maneuverability, because one, Savannah can vote with them.
Yes.
She doesn't have to use this bank of vote. She can, like, she decides to because she doesn't need it. But her presence here shifts the game entirely and could give Rizzo, and say if it was Rizzo and Sophie B., her vote then makes it 3-3 over there, and she could tie it. She's safe from any rock draw, so why the heck not? And just her presence here really shifts the entire strategy and shifts the power dynamics even too. She shows up and Rizzo is just like, all right, the man, the myth, the legend, R-I-Z-G-O-D is here. And he is ready to control this vote instead of being the one on the outs and the one who is the vote.
Yeah, it really takes this fascinating turn where it's not even like Savannah's presence as a player, even though it is a very demanding presence. And it is a presence that, like, deserves attention, especially when it's someone who's safe, who has these qualities to connect with people and able to drive votes. We've seen that previously. But more importantly, it happens to be a number for Rizzo, the person who everyone wants gone anyways, who also has an idol that you're trying to navigate. And it changes your strategic math about the entire situation. Because mm-hmm. what we see previous to this is Sophie Segretti being like, okay, I'm going to put a vote on Jawan. That way, if Rizzo does use his idol,
it's like, not me.
We have a back.
We tie. Yeah.
We have somewhere where we can, like, dictate the vote. We can decide where the vote's going that way. Instead, what we get is now, because like navigating six instead of five is so much harder, because 4-2 makes weird numbers happen if Savannah is voting, right? Mm-hmm. And Savannah voting there, like, there are different things you could do. They could have paired off. It could have been like Sage Juwan, one of them vote for either MC or Sophie. Sophie MC, one of them, or they vote for either Juwan or Sage. Well, no, they put their votes on Rizzo. And then like you try to force the 2-2-2 to get a revote so you can vote out Rizzo here. Personally, I think the best thing they can do is just like put all fours on Rizzo, four votes on Rizzo. You don't like it, it's not ideal. Mm-hmm. But that way you're getting rid of the idol no matter what.
Yeah. So when we were going back into like individuals joining tribal council, I wanted to go back to John Kenny in Vanuatu when he joins, because he's like the hot guy on the island now. Everybody wants to have a date with him and talk to them so they can secure safety for that tribal council. And all while they're supposed to be scrambling too. Like, this is during their scramble time. He's hanging around, and then they have to go to tribal council, and then he decides who gets the necklace. Like, he fully sits down with them and is like part of the tribe.
It's so weird, because this, again, it happens it's episode 3 of Vanuatu that this happens, and both the men and the women are off to tribal council that episode. John Kenny wins the individual immunity challenge, which lets him go to the women's beach and, you know, talk to them, figure things out. He then has to go to his own tribal council that he doesn't get to talk to anyone about. And he's going there directly from the women's beach.
Yeah.
And they're first. The men are first.
Well, he's safe, so it obviously doesn't matter, right? Like, forget his vote. So, like, this is a little something that's different where, you know, he is talking to the other tribe but has no stake in their tribal council aside from giving immunity. And then he also has to do his own tribal council, where essentially he's left out of the strategy portion a bit here and isn't able to talk much with his crew.
The fascinating thing about this entire situation is when we compare the way that John approaches the situation to the way Savannah approaches the situation. Now, granted, different scenarios, right? John is providing safety to someone. Savannah has the opportunity to vote for someone. So it is a bit of a different dynamic. But from what we see on 49, Savannah kind of takes a backseat, tells Rizzo, hey, this is what we can do here to kind of shift the game. Rizzo takes it, runs with it, starts running everything, right? Like, we see phenomenal gameplay from Rizzo where he gets this idea of MC out there. I do feel like we needed a little bit more showing us exactly what was going on in those conversations. I get you don't do it because you don't want to spoil it or anything like that.
Right.
But there was that point in tribal council where Sophie's like, it's either MC or me. And I'm like, wait, what? Like, when did we get to this point?
Off the table. Yeah.
I was just like, is this like this clever play to make it so Rizzo really thinks that you're not voting for him? Or are you just saying he's going to play his idol, so it's going to be one of the two of us? Why are the other two off the table? Mm-hmm. It was weird because we didn't get like full context for it. But in Vanuatu, John Kitty goes on the offensive immediately as soon as he gets on that beach with those women. And then he says, okay, who voted for Dolly? Go there, go there. If you voted for Dolly, if you go there, if you voted for Leanne, I want to figure out what's going on here.
Yeah, I got to know the sides and the dynamics, what's going on. And then essentially, you know, they let him know Dolly voted herself out. But this, you know, giving the immunity necklace is something that I wish would be able to happen, but not with five people. Like, it would have to be like, okay, somehow just like three of you guys are safe and someone won individual immunity. They have to scramble for a little bit and then the person gives immunity. That would be an interesting like split tribal earn the merge situation that they could do if they were wanting to mix something up like this, but I think it's like a better way of kind of getting at what they're trying to get at.
I think with as few people as you have, the only way to make it kind of okay is to do what happened last season or in 47, the last time we saw this with Saul giving the safety without power. Mm-hmm. I guess the only way, right? Like you have to take a guess of who to give it to. You're doing it blind to send it over there. And ultimately that power still lies in the hands of the person who receives it. They mm-hmm. they have this opportunity to use it at that one tribal council, but maybe their vote's more important.
Mm-hmm.
So, but in this instance, if Savannah was giving the necklace away to someone, she's just giving it to Rizzo. Right. Yeah, and maybe that was the conversation that happened to make Sophie say it's either me or MC. Like maybe they thought that was the thing of how this would go down, because like the way that we even saw the conversation, right, where they're like Savannah came here and like this is it, like there has to be more to this than right. just like being able to vote in this tribal council.
And there is. But we also see this instance happen again with Rafe in Guatemala. He also gives the necklace away. We have a little bit of this sort of in Palau as well, but it's Karor as a team deciding who on Oolong should get the necklace, but they amended it again in Guatemala to be just that one person giving away the necklace.
Yeah, and it's really interesting because it is different here, right? Like in Vanuatu, you had and why Vanuatu really stuck out as an example for this, mm-hmm. because John goes to the beach with the,
right.
with the
tribe. And talks to them.
Like we see that with Savannah. Rafe doesn't get that opportunity. Instead, Rafe goes, he was on Nakum, right?
Yishaw? Yeah.
I can't remember. I get the tribes mixed up in that season a lot. He goes with his tribe and they do their tribal council and then everyone leaves except for Rafe. And then Rafe sits in on like sitting at the jury in the jury seats, watches the tribal council, then goes up and votes to give immunity to someone and leaves before
that vote. He was on Swap Nakum. Yes. Sorry. Yeah. Oh, started on Yishaw. Anyway, no. Sorry, continue. I was thinking about that.
It's okay. But that's the thing, is like he's watching and he has to figure out the tribal dynamics based off of what he sees just in tribal council. Which mm-hmm. we know, people are really guarded in tribal council. It's really hard to pick up on exactly what that's going on. So as an outside viewer, as an observer, can you pick up on who's going to be going based on that? I think it's really a fascinating aspect to this.
What is interesting, it was after a swap, though, too. Mm-hmm. So he does see who's on the outs for his, you know, old tribe members. They are outnumbered, so he kind of just picked one and hoped it was correct, but at the same time they could just pivot to someone who was not Gary, who he protected.
Yeah, exactly. So I like the mechanics of it. It makes sense in the pre-merge. The thing is like we have to be discussing this in a post-merge situation. Mm-hmm. Like that's the wild thing about this new era twist, and that again what leaves that sour taste in my mouth is the fact that we are talking about essentially a pre-merge tribal council in the post-merge segment of the game.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's a swap. I'll say it. Survivor 49 has the most swaps in Survivor.
That, you know, that could be true. But it's technically not. And technically, there's no tribe swap ever.
Well, we're not getting into the semantics of swap versus switch again. It's too much. that's the conversation over on the Patreon.
It is, but I gotta let these guys know, if you made it this far in this episode, go back and watch any Tribe Swap episode. John and I haven't watched all of them, but we've watched a handful of them, and Jeff never says Tribe Swap. It's Tribe Switch, or we're gonna switch things up, and it blew our minds. So if you can find an episode where he says, all right, time for a Tribe Swap, let us know so we can see it, because we've only heard switch and only the players saying swap. So that really like shook us to our core. Anywho, I feel like that is the end of our show here.
How do you think the rest of the season goes now? Like, because Rizzo and Savannah come into a very powerful situation now, right? Where they have this extra vote.
Mm-hmm.
There's 9 people left in the game. They only need to swap one person over to their side now in order to force a tie.
And I think there are a bunch of fluid people like Alex who will just like float around and go where he needs to be. He has the information on the idol. He could tell Soph and be like, all right, hey, steal this mm-hmm. idol and I got you.
Well, I mean, Sophie Bellarity hasn't told anyone about her knowledge is power, and I hope it remains that way.
Right.
But you also have like this fluidity in Jawan and Sage now, who just kind of went back to working with Uli after betraying Uli last time. I don't know. I think we're in for a very fluid remainder of the season. And again, I really just kind of wish that we didn't know who was on the next one.
Do they say swap and Tremail? Interesting. I don't know because I've only watched seasons so far that don't have Tremail.
Yeah, but they would say, but the problem is like they never hint at the swap happening. Like a swap always happens like kind of spontaneously, right? At what they think is a challenge most of the time. So I would have to double check. But
yes. Alrighty. So that is our show. Make sure you watch Edge of Extinction episode 11, Awkward, for this weekend. John, what do we got going on in Specialist Universe?
Phil and Will broke down the episode. It's really interesting to watch Phil on Wednesday versus Phil on Thursday this week. I think it's going to be really good for everyone to check out both of those for sure, because Phil was not happy with production on Wednesday. He was not happy about this production twist.
He was so unhappy. He was like, how do I do an Instagram story? Yes. And he just needed to rant about it in that moment.
During the episode. So you can get his unfiltered day. Will comes in with a lot more leveled head this week. So mm-hmm. it's very interesting seeing that dynamic kind of shift a little bit this week. So check that out from Wednesday. Earlier today, Phil was joined by Andy Rita of season 47. Fantastic. Andy's an amazing guest, so definitely check that out. It's a very insightful conversation just about like kind of the state of everything, the emergence of Rizgod.
R-I-Z-G-O-D. Rizgod.
The myth, the legend, Rizgod, baby. definitely worth checking out. Kyle McKenna broke down this week's episode of The Amazing Race right before this, so if you haven't already, check that out. Phil, for the predictions and power rankings on Sunday, will be joined by Blake, because there was a switcheroo with Blake and Andy this week. So Blake will be doing the predictions power rankings. That should be fun. Blake always comes in with some pretty hot takes. Remember, when Blake did predictions power rankings last season, he said Joe had like a 96% chance to win. So definitely expect some hot takes from Blake. That's what I'd be expecting. I assume Tegwith has a Teg talk at some point this week. But I don't know the exact time.
It might be
our
Brant Steele ? And if it is, holy cow, you need to become a patron to watch that. It is insane.
So, but to find out when all of this happens, make sure you like the video, subscribe to the channel, click the bell for notifications. You'll always know when we go live, especially when we have these nice marathons on Thursdays. Then we will be back next week to rewind, hopefully another exciting episode of Survivor 49.
Alrighty, see you later, everyone.
At Ability Chiropractic, we believe every child deserves to grow up healthy, strong, and connected to the incredible power within their own body. From infants to adults, our doctors specialize in purposeful chiropractic care that restores balance between the brain and body, helping you and your family live and heal the way you were designed to, naturally. Families across Columbus are choosing to build lifelong wellness from the start. Discover what true health feels like at Ability Chiropractic. Schedule your visit today at abilitychiro.com.
COTA has turned up the frequency. Buses are running more often across Central Ohio. Starting this September, you'll see expanded weekend service on the east and north sides, including the Easton and Polaris corridors. Plus, there are added weekday trips downtown from New Albany, Canal, Winchester, and Tuttle. It's more service, more connections, and more ways to move across the city. Discover the enhanced schedule at coda.com/service changes. That's coda.com/service changes.
There's still time to get holiday ready. Right Rug Flooring makes it easy with next day installation and 24-month special financing with approved credit. Carpet, hardwood, luxury vinyl, and tile. We have everything you need to make your home shine for family and friends this season. Schedule a free in-home estimate or find a showroom near you. Visit RightRug.com. RiteRug.com. Be holiday ready with Right Rug Flooring. Right.